My name is Mondi Speaker Nkomo, originally from South Africa, but my adopted town is Pittsburgh. I'm glad that Dennis reminded me to come here because at one time in 1967 I was labeled a terrorist. And this shall pass to those who are Arab Americans, Palestinians, Africans, white, whatever, who are suffering. We need to organize. This shall pass. Just to give you a short synopsis, in 1967 I was labeled as terrorist. In 1977 I was a banned person. A law firm gave me a job. We took the South African government and the Ceasefire Homeland to court. We won a landmark case. I was an adult clerk. The next year, 79, I went to exile. What I'm saying is that there are so many centers for constitutional rights all over the world. I'm glad you are lighting the fire. You are giving us hope. So the next phase of constitutional rights globally is what we're trying to do, organizing against sweatshops. That's terrorism of working people. The war, Guantanamo, is similar as slave labor in Haiti and everywhere. So like he said, they don't look at law from a separated ethical morality thing. Law is operational, and the ethics and the values of a constitutional law are dynamic and organic. They reflect the interests of human rights. Even if we have a fundamental right-wing Supreme Court, these are human beings. We need to persuade even the fascists. So what I'm trying to say today, let's give to these people and fight again. Thanks, Jules.
Over here.
I had a question. Just about if you could speak a little more to the non-military people that are working in Iraq, because there was an NPR article maybe a month ago that spoke about certain immunities that these people have, and I was confused and really disqualified by that.
First of all, just before I answer that, let me just say one thing. I think it's also critical for people to sign the sign-up sheet, because I really want to keep in touch, and we want to really create more CCR sort of forums and things about the type of cases and the type of work that we're doing. But now to that question. One of the things that clearly is happening is the privatization of war. That is clearly what's going on in both this Iraq situation and in Guantanamo, and that they are relying more and more on military contractors to do military work. And that was one of the reasons that we decided to make the first thrust of our effort against these military contractors. Now, there are efforts to give them immunity, and our case is going to run into tough sledding. And we know that. You know, there's going to be all sorts of, the first questions are going to be immunity questions. But I think that as of now, the military contractors don't have the same immunity as generals do. You know, as of the law as of right now. And I think while there's been efforts to immunize them, those efforts are not as rooted in the law as military immunity is. And so I think we have a shot at overcoming that immunity. I don't think there's been any broad immunity given to military contractors.
I hope CCR has been paying close attention to this Dean Kurtz case.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I had it in my notes. I actually talked to Steve. This is a case of a professor in Buffalo, and it's an outrageous case. His wife died. Of of a heart attack in the middle of the night. He called the police, called 911. They came and arrested him for suspicion of terrorism. And this is an example of how they're using this anti-terrorism thing to sweep all sorts of things up. Oh, and you know, I actually did forget a very important CCR case, which is that we have challenged one aspect of the Patriot Act and got it declared unconstitutional in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. David Cole, who's one of our key, he's a professor at Georgetown, but he's on the board and he's a key supporter of the center. He's litigated on behalf of the center, challenging the Patriot Act, particularly the part of the Patriot Act that says it is terrorism to materially aid terrorists. And the definition of material aid is so broad that it would include giving children's books to a daycare center that later turns out to have connections with terrorists. And he got the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to overturn that part of the Patriot Act, and I'm sure that's going to go up to the Supreme Court, and you probably will hear about it next June and July. But Steve Kurtz has now been arrested, not on terrorism, but on fraud charges in procuring certain biological agents. I think, and then I'll let you respond, I think that it's all it's a political attack on political activists in Buffalo. They tried to do it through the terrorism. They didn't have the evidence, so now they're doing it through fraud.
Well, there's two more disturbing parts of this. One, a human genetics professor and chair of human genetics.
Yeah, at Pitt, I know.
Here. The chair of the human genetics department here at Pitt has also been brought under indictment.
Is he been indicted or investigated?
He's been indicted.
He's been indicted too, okay.
For supplying harmless bacteria to Kurtz.
Yeah.
Furthermore, even though it's now been considered a backwater to the particular charges involved, Autonomy Media, the publisher of Steve Kurtz and Critical Art Ensemble volumes, is still under subpoena and now have been given until July 16th to supply records of all the purchasers of their entire book collections. Not just Steve Kurtz's books, but all their books. And they have a large catalog of the most interesting and, in fact, serious left-wing aesthetic and political writings in America. And this is, I think, the most chilling aspect of this case, because they're fishing not only to find ways to cast doubts on the purpose that Steve Kurtz might make of these bacteria that the government has already admitted are harmless, but are also casting a wide net for doing investigation on other people that are engaged in similar politically motivated aesthetic work like Steve Kurtz.
Yeah, and this is a case which I really think highlights the dangers of the Patriot Act, highlights the danger of the broad breadth of government investigation. And I would urge people here to get involved in trying to defend both Steve Kurtz, and I think making sure that the University of Pittsburgh, which I have very concrete experience with, is not always courageous in defending people, gives this professor a full defense. I don't know if people, Steph, do you have some more information on that? And we were thinking of having a future meeting on the Kurtz case and discussing that.
I'm hoping that you would contact Autonomy Media when you get back to New York to see if they need representation on this matter, because I think this is a serious First Amendment issue on their behalf for all people doing it.
I certainly will, and I'll talk to the people at the center. I, by the way, don't get back. I do get back to New York, but I'm not going back. I stay here. This is my home.
I'm interrupting as moderator. I'm interrupting just because there's a lot of other hands up. So, right here.
Now that we've won the Guantanamo case,
Yeah. There are two things. I'll repeat the question. The question is, now that we've won the basic, the first step in the Guantanamo case, isn't it true that the hearings that are going to go on, they're going to give great deference to the government's position, and you know, they're not going to be like American courtroom hearings? There are two things that we have to keep distinct here. The first is, our case in Guantanamo was that they're holding 600 people there without giving them any hearing as to whether they're innocent or not, whether they're civilians or combatant. That's as a basic, and the courts have to have jurisdiction over that. That we won. The second thing, though, is that they've also set up military tribunals. That's a whole separate issue. I mean, not totally separate, because if we had lost our case, there would have been no hope for that either. But today, I think Bush announced that they've designated 7 more people as enemy combatants that they're going to try before those commissions. And there are serious questions about whether a trial before those commissions comports with due process. You know, whether, you know, the rules of evidence, there's all sorts of issues which will eventually go to the Supreme Court in a case arising out of one of those trials or a number of those trials. Those trials haven't started. So that's one issue. One issue is the setup of the military commissions, which I think are unlawful to begin with. The Senate's position is the executive doesn't have the right to try people by military commission. They can try people under the criminal law, or they can keep them as prisoners of war, but they can't set up this military commission. That issue is going to go to the Supreme Court in another case. What's going to happen in our case is, for you see, what's the most troubling thing in this is that even the military commissions, the government asserts that they could have somebody who went through the military commissions, was declared innocent, and that they still could be held, because the government is holding these people till the end of the war on its own say-so. So there's two questions. One is the military commissions, and the second is, can you detain people forever without any process whatsoever? On our case, it's going to go back down to the district court, and the question is, what process is going to be due them? The government's going to argue minimal process. We're going to argue more maximum process, and that's going to go back up to the courts. Yeah, Mike, Jonathan.
First, thank you. First, I think that the center is entitled to thanks for winning. And in the Guantanamo case, we won an inspiring victory over fascism. And I want to announce that there's, related to Abu Ghraib, that there is going to be a fast and vigil at the federal building from sundown July 26, which is about 8-ish, till sundown July 27, a fast and vigil at the federal building to acknowledge our responsibility for these evils which were done in our name and under our flag and with our tax dollars. And I have more information if anybody's interested.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. And I do think it's critical for us as Americans to stand up against what is a total undermining of the values we claim to hold on this torture, which, as I say, is clear, is not just individual soldiers, but underlying government policy. No.
As one who does not believe that the Supreme Court is an independent body of the capitalist state, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it pretty much does what the ruling class wants it to do. I'm interested in your analysis of why they're doing this. I mean, what's going on? The movement is not that large. There is no huge social pressure. We are not disrupting production. We are not putting millions in the streets, as during Vietnam and the civil rights era, when they felt compelled to keep production going, to rule, I think. What's going on? Why did they rule this way?
Well, let's start with your first statement. This gets into a little bit more of a theoretical point, but to say that the Supreme Court is not an independent entity separate from the rest of the ruling class is, of course, in my view, correct, in that the Supreme Court is not going to hold that capitalism is unconstitutional. And in fact, when we tried in the, you know, in the 60s and 70s, people tried to argue that there was a right to food, a right to housing, and eventually those cases all lost pretty unanimously in the Supreme Court. To say that, however, is not to say that the Supreme Court doesn't have a certain independence. And I think that throughout American society, history, there is certain flexibility that the court has. Now, in wartime, the court's independence has been minimal. And World War II was the best example, where you had one of the most liberal courts in American history affirming the Japanese-American detentions. So why do you have one of the more conservative courts in American history now saying that they can't do this? And in my view, what's going on with the court, and it's not just in these cases, but I do think the court, the moderate conservatives, let's say, O'Connor and Kennedy, have been somewhat repelled by the extreme measures of this administration. And there is more of an interaction. O'Connor and Kennedy, they teach abroad. They have more interaction with what's going on abroad. And the revulsion abroad of this policy, particularly in Britain and other countries, I think had some impact. Now, if you look at the scope of our victory, it was a great victory, particularly symbolically, in that it said the executive can't do whatever it wants. But really what it said was that the executive has to, at minimum, comply with the Geneva Conventions. And you know, in every war that the United States government has fought under Nixon, under the first Bush administration, we have given hearings to prisoners where there was doubt about whether they combatants or civilians. And so I don't think the court was undermining the capitalist system here. But from a conservative perspective, saying you're going too far, and it's our job as the court, just like it was Franklin Roosevelt's job during the Depression, to take steps that reaffirm, can make us feel good again about us as a civil libertarian country without really undermining the fundamental basis of the war against terror. And I don't think it does, and I don't think the Supreme Court's... you see, the center would have taken a more radical position. Our position is this whole war on terrorism is a misnomer, that this is not a war, that the war analogy is a wrong one, and that this should be fought using the normal criminal laws. That position would have lost 9-0 in the Supreme Court. So we took the position that that the executive can't do whatever he wants in the war. And that position won. But it's a minimalist position. It's a minimalist position, and therefore the Supreme Court can affirm that minimalist position. Had we taken our more radical, which we did, but you know, once it got to the Supreme Court, it was futile to keep on arguing that, because we argued what we thought we could win, because you know, we felt that would set the tone. And the key task right now is to fight against this executive unilateralism. But you know, that so I think there's, within that play, the Supreme Court has a lot of, you know, play to it, but you're not going to win a fundamental reversal of American policy. Yeah, that's, I've written an article comparing Guantanamo and the prison system here. And you know, a frightening comparison, by the way, is that they are going to give, the U.S. government claims they're going to give some compensation to the people tortured in Iraq. It's not going to be much, and what we're suing for is much more serious compensation. But they say they're going to give some compensation. If that happened to a prisoner, what happened in Abu Ghraib happened to a prisoner in the United States, and they sued under the Eighth Amendment, they would be entitled to zero compensation. Their case would be thrown out of court. And the case would be thrown out of court because Congress passed a law, which the Supreme Court has affirmed, saying you're not entitled to damages unless you could show physical injury. Sexual humiliation, cruel and unusual, degrading treatment, unless you have a broken arm. You can't get any damages. And in the prison context, when we first started this prison case, we could not get any self-respecting prison attorney, either here or in Ohio, to sue. That's why they brought me. I didn't know anything about prisons and prison law. But they brought me in because nobody else would—I'm Don Quixote of the legal world. So they said, this is a losing case. It's right up your alley. Why don't you do this? And I said, great. You know, it's an outrage. Prison litigation is the toughest litigation in this country. They've made it. They've passed a law making it that you can't get attorney's fee. You can't get any significant attorney's fees. The attorney's fees is way watered down because they don't want prisoners to have lawyers. So I think there is this parallel. You know, and the detainees, the Turkmen case, the Muslim detainees, these people were all thrown into supermax prisons. That's what they, and the Guantanamo guards, particularly Guantanamo, the head of Guantanamo was taken from a maximum security prison in the United States, and he said, this is what we would do in the, what? Maybe that's right. Actually, he was fired for one. But there is a lot of connections. My fear, and as I say, I think our case, the Supermax case, may go up to the Supreme Court. My fear is that prisoners, like terrorists, have been a disfavored group. And I hope, Robin, you're right, that the tide will turn. Thus far, it hasn't. And of the thousands of challenges to prison transfers like ours without any hearing that we made, so far we're the only case that has won in a major class action. I think prison litigation and prisoners are still seen as a forgotten